This is Mac Duncan. Welcome to episode 2 of Essays from the Middle. If you missed episode 1, that's okay. It's readily available for you on whatever platform you're using now. When putting together this week's show, I was hoping to stumble upon a theme. For a moment, I thought the theme would be arrogance. And that may yet prove to be the case. Perhaps it's hubris. Perhaps this whole thing is hubris. Well, give it a listen, and let me know what you think the theme is later. As promised from episode 1, I intend to discuss my experience at Phoenix Fan Fusion. For the uninitiated, Phoenix Fan Fusion used to be Phoenix Comic Con. While the other name gave a clear impression of what it was, it did cause a little bit of controversy. The original Comic Con, San Diego Comic Con, what's called now Comic Con International, they have a trademark on the word Comic-Con, which I believe extends to the two-word variant Comic-Con. Major cities all over the country have started conventions like this, more so in the past couple of decades. Many of them have attached the word Comic-Con to whatever city they were in. Most of them did this without consulting the San Diego company. The original Comic-Con started suing the other conventions and winning. Wanting to avoid a pricey lawsuit that they would lose, Phoenix Comic-Con went through a couple of name changes and landed on Fan Fusion. I've participated in some version of this convention, under whatever name it was, in multiple ways, off and on, since 2008. I've participated in and led a few panels. I've performed in the Adult Puppet Slam. I've covered the event as a journalist. And for years, I screened films in their film festival. In 2008, their film festival didn't have a lot of content, so they were very willing to allow me to submit just about anything. By 2011, the convention became cool to the local film community, and suddenly my work wasn't quite good enough. By 2016, the film festival program was done. That brings me to this year. This was my first year as a vendor. My first big comic book convention with my own comic books. I'm going to pause for a moment with a recommendation. This was only my first year as a vendor, and I'm not one to offer advice. Russ Kazmarischek, and I'm sorry if I pronounced that name wrong, but Russ is a person with 2 decades of experience doing this specific thing, and he can offer advice. I recommend his YouTube channel, Karaoke Fanboy TV, where he is releasing videos offering advice to newcomers like me. Now back to my experience. I didn't actually know I was going to do Fan Fusion until about a week before the show. I had applied back in October. At least I thought I did. Somewhere in the process of me filling out the application and sending it, the send didn't quite happen, and it never got to them. Since I never got the email rejecting me from the show, I followed up asking if I could possibly get in on a waiting list for 2023. This is when I found out they never got my original app. A few emails back and forth, and I got myself a table. This was a strange shift in thinking for me. Since I had already accepted I wasn't doing the show, I convinced myself that it was for the best. The pandemic is still very active, and I hadn't done any major events in over 2 years. I had done a small convention at the Tempe Library back in January, but that was outdoors and only a few hours. Not very traffic heavy. Fan Fusion required me to be in a crowded airplane hangar-sized basement with thousands of people, mostly maskless, for 3 consecutive days. I wasn't 100% sure that I was emotionally ready for this. It was my wife's love that got me to the con. She knew how much this meant to me, possibly more than I did. She was there backing me up, even though it was stressful and unpleasant for her. My wife, Suzanne, does a lot for me out of love. There are a lot of things that I get into that she has no interest in. We haven't been inside a movie theater since 2019, but we have gone to the drive-in. The movies they played were pretty mainstream, like Ghostbusters and Spider-Man. Not exactly what you call art house. So movies for me, but not really movies for her. But she'd go along and join me in the fun, just because she wants to be with me. Great acts of love that I don't appreciate enough. And here was another. The convention ran Friday through Sunday on Memorial Day weekend. On Thursday, my teaching job had wrapped up for the summer. That meant we had all afternoon to drag my stuff to the convention center and set up. When we found my table, my booth neighbors hadn't arrived yet, so I had plenty of space to put up my modest banner and set up my product just to see how it fit in the space. If you follow me on Facebook or Instagram, you probably saw my Thursday afternoon setup. The whole experience took 2 hours with Suzanne's help. Probably would have taken longer on my own. I arrived at the con 9 a.m. Friday, made my way through security, found my table, and my neighbors were there this time. Every other display dwarfed my tiny banner. I was practically invisible at my little table. Truth be told, when nobody knows who you are, you're likely to be invisible no matter what. But it did make me think about how to make my space more visually competitive without stepping on my neighbors. In my past con experiences, I've been so wrapped up in the programming and other aspects of the event that the time would fly by as if I were at Disneyland. As a vendor, though, one is usually standing there at a table for 8 to 12 hours each day for 3 full days. The passage of time becomes more noticeable when you're being ignored for significant stretches of that time. Suzanne came down to join me near the end of the first day. I know this wasn't a pleasant experience for her. None of this was. But she was there. She was there for me. She was there for me because she loves me. That's all that matters. I did make a few sales. I would have liked to have made more. I definitely went home with a lot of inventory on Sunday night. I did finally get rid of the t-shirts that I had purchased for my crowdfunding 2 years earlier, since they displayed my original branding. See last week's episode for the story of my brand confusion. I decided to literally give them away on the last day. Those who took the shirts were not only happy to get a free shirt, but they were also sympathetic to my branding issues. Will I do it again? Yes. Did I learn from this experience? I hope so. Will I work smarter and not harder in the coming years? Time will tell. Is the era of the movie star over? There are still movie stars. We still occasionally see an actor's name above the title. But when was the last time a film was marketed to you based solely on the lead actor? In the 20th century, the matinee idol drove box office. Actors like Arnold Schwarzenegger, Sylvester Stallone, Jean-Claude Van Damme, and Steven Seagal all carried with them their own specific brand. You saw their name and face on a poster. You knew what you were getting. It didn't matter what the movie was called, who directed it, or who else was in it. As much as we loved watching Harrison Ford play Han Solo, Indiana Jones, or Jack Ryan, we were just as happy to see him play the president for a movie set in a universe we'd never seen before. Those days are gone, for the most part. Intellectual property, or IP, seems to be steering the ship right now. Since 2008, Marvel's Cinematic Universe has cranked out more than 20 films, plus numerous spin-off TV and streaming series. And while there is no shortage of big-name stars on the call sheets, it's the franchise that's bringing people to the theater. Nobody went to see Spider-Man Homecoming because Gwyneth Paltrow was in it. Gwyneth Paltrow didn't see the movie for Gwyneth Paltrow. Gwyneth Paltrow didn't see it. She thought she was just doing another day on an Avengers movie. And she wasn't wrong. We are no longer cultivating action stars. Answer this question. How many of you went to see that movie where John Cena was a firefighter? Who remembers it existing? Who remembers the title? Perhaps the closest person the current era has to Schwarzenegger is Dwayne Johnson. Like John Cena, Johnson began cultivating his brand in the world of professional wrestling with his charismatic good guy persona, The Rock. And due respect to professional wrestling, I'm not a fan, but I know a lot of people who are. It's not really a sport. It's a theatrical event pretending to be a sport. And I'm pretty sure the fans know this. The careful and well-rehearsed choreography of it all allows the audience to be entertained without anyone suffering serious injury. It also allows the fans to root for the so-called good guys, like John Cena and The Rock, because when they win, we know they're not really hurting anyone. And The Rock was able to carry this trust from his audience with him as he crossed over into cinema stardom. Once he was able to break away from one-note parodies of his wrestling persona, his early work on Scorpion King or the unforgettable episode of Star Trek Voyager, once he was able to develop his brand as a hero with a sense of humor, he was able to leave The Rock behind and convince us all to take him seriously with a name like Dwayne. But if we look at Johnson's more recent work, there's little in the way of his name above the title. He's been more successful in lending his brand to existing IP like Jumanji, Fast and Furious, and Jungle Cruise, which is Disney's latest attempt to repeat the lightning in the bottle that was Pirates of the Caribbean. I'm willing to bet that more people will take in the opening weekend of Black Adam, as did the entire theatrical run of Skyscraper. So, is the era of the movie star truly over? Perhaps for the action hero. The comedian, on the other hand, may still bring us in on their merits. But comedy is a whole other conversation. My relationship with improv. This is a difficult subject for me to take on right now. I feel like this will be multiple segments over multiple weeks. And even if I give myself permission to do that, I still won't be able to cover it all. Here's one of the big challenges. If you recall the rules I'm holding myself to from week one, the rules for this podcast, I want to avoid saying or publishing anything that would cause anyone harm. In discussing my relationship with improv, I run that risk. I know it sounds strange to an outsider. Improv is this fun, silly, comedic art. How can discussing it cause harm? If you are an improviser, have a close relationship with an improviser, or have spent any time in or near that world, either through classes or in the vicinity of a theater, then you know. It's actually a dangerous space. It doesn't have to be. I don't want it to be. Many people, myself included, have made efforts to make improv safe. I can't speak to anyone else's success. I can, however, say without hyperbole that I have consistently failed. And while improv is an art form that claims to embrace and celebrate failure, safety is one area where failure should never be an option. On Saturday, June 25th, I will be appearing in the 21st Annual Phoenix Improv Festival. I will be in this festival for the 21st consecutive year. It's a rare honor to make that claim, I suppose. For the third consecutive year, the festival will be streaming online. The performances will be presented virtually, either directly from the troupe's hometown theater, or, in the case of my team, Apollo 12, we'll be doing it from our individual homes via Zoom. I haven't done an improv show for an audience in any way for close to a year. When the pandemic started and we shut down our theater, we started doing weekly shows on Zoom. This type of performing started to wear on me, and I got to the point where I had to stop. It wasn't just performing from a Zoom meeting that was unsettling. Improv in general was losing its flavor. I no longer look forward to getting up on stage again. I was dreading it. I still am. I don't know when I'll be on a stage again or if I still want to be there. It could be where I am in my life right now, or it could be what the art form represents. That failure to keep people safe. I not only appeared in every Phoenix Improv Festival, but for a number of years, I helped produce it. I was also a co-founder of the Torch Theater, and by extension, a member of the board. I was also an instructor at the Torch. Producer, founder, board member, instructor. These were all positions of power within our small community. All positions I had to give up in recent years in order to protect my mental and emotional health. And I would be lying to you, but more to myself, if I said this power was never abused. Abused and neglected. Which is why I had to step away. I don't want to go into details, mainly because of rule number one. But I also don't want to make this sound more salacious than it is. I never committed any crimes. I never hurt anyone physically. And no one ever brought a complaint to me or against me, even if I deserved it. But I allowed others to be hurt. I was complicit through inaction. I failed to advocate when I was needed. A lot of people have been hurt who didn't deserve it. And some friendships have been lost, if they ever existed. So I will improvise over Zoom at PIF 21. But I will never produce another festival. I will never have a controlling interest in another theater. I will likely never teach another improv class. And I don't know if I'll ever return to a live improv stage again. Silver Age Superman was a jerk. Last time when I was discussing Matt Reeves' film, The Batman, I made a tangential side quest in praising the postmodern Superman, specifically the CW version portrayed by Tyler Hoechlin in Superman and Lois. I stand by this. But after 80 years, it's fair to say that not all not all of the last sons of Krypton have been super. For many of my generation, the definitive Superman from our collective childhood was Christopher Reeve from 1978's Superman the Movie, directed by Richard Donner. This version carries over into Superman 2, but falls apart a little around 3 and 4. Reeve's performance gives us two distinct characters. His Clark Kent is shy, soft-spoken, clumsy, and slouches when he walks. His Superman, by contrast, is confident, charismatic, and very aware of his strength. And both these guys are fake. The real character is the one we see when he thinks no one is watching. The guy who catches the mugger's bullet before pretending to faint. The guy who is utterly devastated when he realizes he couldn't save Lois, just before he spins the earth backwards and saves Lois. We see more of this true Clark in Superman 2, when he chooses to give up his powers to be with Lois. The conversation with Jor-El, or Lara, depending on which version you watch, where he is asking to be human. This is Reeve's finest moment. This scene defines Clark Kent. His love for Lois and for humanity is far more important to him personally than any superhuman ability. Sadly, this sacrifice goes right out the window as soon as he gets beat up in a diner and discovers General Zod will take over the planet if he doesn't do a do-over on the whole power thing. For me, Reeve began the era of the postmodern Superman and ended the Silver Age. And the Silver Age needed to end. Because that Superman was a jackass. When we talk about the Silver Age of comic books, we're mostly looking at the era of the Comics Code. The Comics Code was an unofficial set of industry rules that were intended to make comic books safe for children. It was a lot like the old Hollywood Production Code, that was created by the Catholic watchdog groups that tried to push their own values onto all things cinema. One thing the Production Code and the Comics Code had in common was that they were both technically voluntary. Technically. Studios and publishers were so afraid of losing money that they held their products to these standards well into the 1960s. So, this is the era where we get the comics that inspired the Adam West Batman and the Electric Company Spider-Man. Since everything was for the kids, our storytelling didn't go too deep, and there wasn't a whole lot of character development or moving stories forward. Most stories were self-contained and episodic, and mostly geared to maintaining the status quo. This can be laughable or frustrating to a more contemporary audience that has become more accustomed to intricate universes and complex storylines. Superman was definitely into protecting the status quo. Clark Kent was always going to be his other identity. He would always be a reporter. It would always be a secret. And he and Lois would never get married. And this is why Superman is a jerk. In this time, there are various spin-off titles of Superman, including Superman's pal, Jimmy Olsen, and Superman's girlfriend, Lois Lane. The former title couldn't decide if Superman was supposed to be a father figure to Jimmy or more of a big brother. Either way, Superman treated him like crap. He would frequently allow Jimmy access to dangerous artifacts, and when Jimmy would inevitably get himself into trouble, Superman would rescue him, but not without the standard, "Let's let this be a lesson to you" shame lecture. There's also a recurrent theme of Superman destroying gifts that Jimmy would give him. Then there's Lois. Poor mid-20th century pre-feminism Lois. The male writers to her titles seemed to be convinced that Lois had no real ambition and that she was obsessed with getting married. She was so focused on this goal that whenever Superman would avoid anything romantic, which was always, Lois would go out of her way to marry whatever guy would be standing on the next panel. In this effort to maintain the status quo, Superman would go to great lengths to avoid getting married to Lois. Turning her down for dinner dates wasn't enough. He would execute elaborate schemes in an effort to gaslight her and string her along. I think there may have been one story where Superman arranged for Lois to meet some other dude, fall in love with him, and marry him, and then he dies off-panel. Because it's better for Lois to be a heartbroken widow than to be the wife of Superman. This was also the era when they explained how the eyeglasses were actually an effective disguise. Apparently, Superman has the ability to perform mass hypnosis on the entire world while he's pretending to be Clark Kent. Yeah, that's not ethically questionable. The Silver Age is long gone, as is Christopher Reeve. Superman, however, endures. The nice thing about having more than 8 decades worth of media available is we can choose how much of it we consume. It's okay to discard the rest. Canon is not that important. Listening to Essays from the Middle. Essays from the Middle is a product of Carefree Wright Enterprises, LLC. Today's music provided by Alex Grohl, Julius H., Alex Make Music, and Music Unlimited. These and other tracks available at pixabay.com. Available episodes of Essays from the Middle can be found at Podbean, Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, Spotify, Amazon Music, Pandora, and YouTube. For early access and bonus recordings, please support our Patreon page at patreon.com/MacDuncan, MacDuncan. All material for Essays from the Middle, written and recorded by Mac Duncan. Copyright 2022, Carefree Wright Enterprises, LLC, all rights reserved.